it's definitely an emerging industry and market. And maybe we can be on the cutting edge of it here.
Haynes takes a new direction in alternative energy research. And Northern Lynn Canal community projects are mostly spared in the governor's capital budget vetoes. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. Governor Parnell's final budget cuts may have set some of Southeast Alaska's big hydro projects back, but Northern Lynn Canal communities succeeded in retaining much of their various project funds. The final FY11 capital budget was released this week, approving more than $18 million for Haynes, Kluckwan, and Skagway, and cutting about $2.5 million in projects. Much of Parnell's $300 million in vetoes seemed to target Southeast Alaska, with the area's smallest communities hit hardest. The governor acknowledged the disparity in this report from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Sean Parnell acknowledges his cuts went deep into several parts of the state.
Southeast took proportionately a much larger share by population than any other area of the state, except perhaps Southwest Alaska.
More than $60 million was vetoed from more than 30 Southeast projects, about one-fifth of the governor's $300 million in capital budget cuts. Parnell says the figure is so high because the region did so well in lawmakers' spending plan, and he says it continues to have plenty of money for projects.
Both Southwest Alaska and Southeast Alaska have extremely healthy capital budgets, both from what the legislature passed and with what is left in the capital budget. So I think the numbers speak for themselves that Southeast will have much to look forward to in the way of projects, jobs, and economic development in the future because of this budget.
The governor's numbers show about $145 million in state money left in spending for the region. Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman says that's good, but given the state's healthy financial situation and last year's small capital budget, it could have been better.
Well, there's no reason to have the vetoes other than, a political reason. Financially, there's no reason to do it.
Parnell cut five Southeast projects funded by the state's cruise ship head tax. Karen Rayfeld, the governor's budget director, says state attorneys determined the projects could be outside of the program's funding parameters.
They had identified these particular items as potentially vulnerable to a legal challenge because of either the type of project or the backup that we had for those particular projects not being particularly linked to the cruise ship tax itself.
Among those vetoed projects was $2 million for Kluckwan to purchase the Chilkat Portage Cove Dock and Chilkat Express for cruise ship passenger access. Rayfeld says that buy was cut because it could compete with existing business. Skagway got the financial okay for larger projects like $4 million for the commercial passenger vessel lightering and harbor improvements. Also included was $800,000 for the municipal wastewater treatment facility improvements and funds for Dyea Road emergency repair. Funds to complete the Skagway Traditional Council Public Utility Building were nixed. Mosquito Lake Elementary mechanical upgrades made the cut. Haynes saw project money go through for the American Bald Eagle Foundation, Haynes Assisted Living, the Senior Center, Port Chilkoot Dock upgrades, Lily Lake Transmission Line, highway improvements, and the Chilkat Bridge replacement. But the biggest project survived too, with $7.4 million for the Haynes Airport drainage improvements and upgrades, and nearly $3 million for the Port Chilkoot cruise ship dock upgrade. However, Haynes saw money dissolve for improvements to part of the Southeast Alaska State Fairgrounds. Statewide, Parnell cut half of the $10 million appropriation for the State Docks and Harbors Grant Fund, a program particularly important to Southeast. Representative Bill Thomas said, quote, "A major portion of that would go to Southeast, so we probably got hit harder than we think." Thomas also commented that he was still happy there was so much money available, despite the vetoes, and in a Juneau Empire article, wouldn't criticize Parnell, saying, quote, "We've got four more years with this guy, so we can't make him mad," end quote. The governor cut $4.5 million toward a road connecting Cake and Petersburg, saying the Marine Highway and other transportation projects, like the Alaska Class Ferry, are a higher priority.
The money is now been appropriated. It's been signed off on, a full $120 million is there. So I anticipate that DOT and the Marine Highway System has what it needs to begin moving that process forward for the Alaska Class Ferry.
Haynes is still considering whether or not wood heat can work for the borough, and so far have run into a lot of unanswered questions. One of them, where to get the specialized wood pellets to burn. Well, what if we made our own wood pellets right in Haines? That's the latest question from the Energy and Sustainability Commission. This week, the group began exploring possible new directions in their wood heat research, among them constructing a wood pellet plant in Haines to produce wood fuel for at least 4 borough buildings and enough to sell product to surrounding buyers. Gary Lidholm is the chair of the Energy and Sustainability Commission in Haines. Lidholm talks about the money that's still available for wood heat research. The funds are left over from a grant that paid for the recent wood heat feasibility study. Not so inspiring results from that convinced the commission to maybe redirect their research.
You know, we got the draft report from CE2 Engineering. There was some dissatisfaction with the way that that firm handled some of the cost analysis, and we have suggested to the assembly that the remaining money for that be given to another firm and maybe take a slightly different approach. There's been a lot of change in the wood heat emerging industry here in the last year or two.
The wood heat market is growing in Southeast Alaska, with the Native corporation Sea Alaska converting their headquarters in Juneau to wood heat.
And they're trying to encourage more people to do that so they can bring in a pellet market supply. And we'd like to kind of be part of that.
And locally, Chilkoot Indian Association is planning to heat 2 new fourplexes with wood pellets. CIA met with the commission on Tuesday to talk about their interest in building a pellet plant in Haines.
And so I think what we're going to recommend to the assembly via the facilities manager is that we complete this wood heat feasibility study, but maybe take a closer look at wood pellets systems. Kind of a little bit of new direction on this. The industry seems to be changing very rapidly and moving toward this.
Haines has been learning more and more about wood heat in the past several years. They've considered wood chips with boilers and a central heating system for borough buildings. Locals have installed systems in their homes, and one is even applying for grants to build a small pellet plant. But the borough also knows that it would take a lot of energy to produce pellets here, and that equals high cost with the local kilowatt rate. Lidholm says that's probably why there's no pellet production in Southeast right now.
And so the pellet manufacturing plants in British Columbia, and there are a lot of them, are shipping pellets all around the world. So most of the market right now is coming, the market is being fed by British Columbia pellet outfits. And that's where Sea Alaska is probably going to get theirs until the local market develops, and they really want to encourage the local market to develop.
Pellet manufacturers stay afloat by shipping most of their product to outside users, which means the success of a Haines project would rely on growing popularity of pellet-fueled heating in the rest of Southeast.
Well, and the market in Haines is not there yet to support that. But when we start getting people like Sea Alaska Corporate Building, they want to displace about 35,000 gallons of fuel oil with pellets. That's going to take a lot of pellets, and we're starting to see more of that in Southeast. So it's definitely an emerging industry and market, and maybe we can be on the cutting edge of it here.
Further research could answer questions like where to get the wood for pellets. Without an industrial mill nearby, does it make sense to truck in waste wood and dead trees? Discussions on the subject continue between the borough and CIA. The groups are also inviting two companies in the business to present this summer: a timber firm from Oregon, and a Vermont company that builds small-scale pellet plants.
So this is kind of happening really fast all of a sudden about the wood pellet part of biomass energy. And since we've not completed that study yet, there's money left in it, maybe we'll kind of change the focus and have an engineering firm look a little closer at the wood pellet possibilities.
Decisions on road building and timber harvests in roadless areas of the nation's forests will be up to the Secretary of Agriculture for at least another year. The Secretary announced that decision last Friday, citing ongoing court battles over the Clinton-era roadless rule. Matt Lichtenstein reports on reaction from around Southeast Alaska, home to the nation's largest national forest, the Tongass.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said his decision to retain authority over inventoried roadless areas reflected, quote, President Obama's commitment to protecting our forests by ensuring that all projects in roadless areas receive a higher level of scrutiny. Vilsack first assumed that authority about a year ago for the nation's forests and grasslands. The approval of timber harvester road building projects was previously left up to Forest Service officials at the regional or local levels. President Bill Clinton first instituted roadless protections for about 60 million acres of undeveloped federal land in 2001. President George W. Bush later exempted the Tongass from the roadless rule. The rule itself was also challenged by several states and industry groups in federal court. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the rule last summer, but it's the subject of another appeal in the Tenth Circuit. The Secretary's decision is good news for Tom Waldo, staff attorney with the Juneau Office of Earth Justice, a national law firm that represents many environmental causes on the Tongass.
The roadless backcountry areas of the Tongass are places that people in Southeast Alaska value for hunting, fishing, boating, tourism, recreation, subsistence, and other uses.
Waldo believes the shift in policy is a sign the administration may permanently apply roadless protections for the Tongass. Timber industry representatives on the Tongass have been skeptical that the Forest Service's emphasis on restoration through new forest stewardship contracts will actually provide sustainable jobs. Owen Graham is director of the Alaska Forest Association in Ketchikan. Graham believes that the ongoing restrictions on projects in roadless areas will continue to mean there won't be enough timber for the couple of medium-sized mills that have not permanently closed on the Tongass. The Secretary of Agriculture's renewed directive for roadless areas will remain in place for another year. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
For KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.